All right, we are back, and Joe's running off.
I guess he got camera shy.
Oh, okay. Anyway, we are back, and we are here today with East Coast Spirit Chasers. How you guys doing today?
Good.
Great. Hi. Thank you. Great.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for showing up. Thank you for coming in. So I'm going to start off with a little bit of a question here. And this is, like I said, we do a round robin. So we can start up here at the top and work our way around or whatever. So just curiosity here for the people that don't know you and haven't actually seen your website or worked with you or anything. What got you interested and started in the paranormal?
So I guess I'll go first if I'm at the top. Yep. I don't know how this works. So what got me interested in the paranormal is actually my teacher, who is actually on the team, Dave Legender. He runs a paranormal club, or did, at my high school. And I was just interested, and I had him as a teacher, so I kept asking him all these questions about it. And eventually he was like, hey, you know, I want you to come out. And then, you know, I got on my first investigation. I was hooked ever since, and I'm so thankful that he brought me into this opportunity.
Cool. Joe?
I guess I'll go next in this order. But
no, we can go like this.
I will confirm CJ was hooked once he went the first time. I knew he was going to want to come on every one week he could. What got me involved was some strange activity at my house. This house was built for me. I'm the original owner. And my son kept telling me the house was haunted. And I said, I'm the original owner. If anybody's going to haunt this house, it's going to be me. There was nothing here prior to this house being built, but his abilities, he was able to see certain things and he was having experiences when he was young. But what capped it off for me was a broken music box played at midnight in my house. And I heard it go off a couple times and I tried to open it and have it play on its own by myself and it wouldn't work. And then I realized it was midnight. It was the birthday of a deceased relative that had died 5 years before.
Okay.
So at that point, I was all in and investigating and learning more, and I contacted Nick.
Cool. All right, next.
You want to do Terry, Travis, Joe, and then finish with me in the middle?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'll go because I'm trying to keep in order. It's pretty much every kid, you know, when they're 13, 14 years old, you know, everyone does weird New Jersey. They get the books. They do all this crazy stuff. And, you know, my group of friends and I, we kind of took it to that next level. We try to go to as many places as possible. I remember I got a recorder for like $5 offline. Try to be like, you know, the guys on TV. And ever since then, I was kind of just digging more deep into it. And I was fortunate to get linked up with Nick and to kind of see the other side of things. It's not just, you know, talking to recorders and, you know, trying to find spooky things, you know. There's a lot more to it. And I was fortunate enough, again, to be connected with Nick to kind of see the other side of it. And now there's just so many more possibilities. I'm still learning every day. I've been on the team about a year. I've probably been on the least investigations because I have the craziest work schedule. But
we want to get into his work to actually investigate.
Yeah,
like, so you know what you do.
Yeah, I work in a prison. So awesome. I'm one of the officers in there. So there's a lot of crazy stuff in there. I'm dying for us to get in, but it's tough on the ethics and all that stuff.
How long you been working at the prison?
About 2 years.
He started as an inmate and then graduated from there.
I was an honorary CO. I was the runner. You know, I used to always help them out. And then one day they just gave me the keys and said, hey, I could do this too. So I broke out, went to the academy, and took it from there.
There you go.
I guess we'll go and then we'll finish with you guys.
Yeah. So Travis and I got into this when he was 14. He asked to go on an investigation for his birthday. So we went to Gettysburg because we live fairly close to Gettysburg. And we all know how haunted Gettysburg is. And we saw stuff the first night out.
Really?
So at that point, I didn't know that Travis could see things. So he kept that a secret until we were on the team. And I think Nick might have been the first one to realize that he could see things. So everybody else knew before me. But ever since then, we've been hooked. We randomly ran into Nick in a prison. We were both investigating Moundsville separately, and we ran into each other there, and we've been together ever since.
Cool.
And I guess, well, for me, I've always been interested in the paranormal. I always watched the shows, you know, and all that good stuff. And then one day he actually reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to come out on an investigation in Gettysburg. And I came out and we were investigating a bed and breakfast. And the night as I was going to bed after the investigation, I actually heard a disembodied voice whisper in my ear. At the time, I thought it was Hay, but when I told him the next morning what had happened, he reviewed the footage and turns out there was a woman spirit in my room who was actually asking for help. And since then, I was in.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
And as far as me, I didn't really watch like the Ghost Adventure shows and stuff like that at the time. I was always fascinated with paranormal, and my girlfriend at the time, she's like, "Oh, let's watch My Ghost Story." And I was like, "All right." And it's basically just, you know, everyday people. It's not teams or anything like that. And just everyday people going out and showing the evidence that they caught. So I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool. You know, like I could do that." So I was like, "Well, let me get a digital recorder and a camera, and that's all I'll need." And, you know, several years later and $20,000 worth of equipment later, you know, I'm still using the digital recorder and camera mainly instead of everything else, really. And I've been hooked from then. You know, once you have like your first experience where you're like, wow, it's just such an adrenaline rush. And yeah, it's just, you know, what else? I want to learn more.
Yeah, Dale was asking if that was the Farnsworth house that you were talking about.
We've been to the Farnsworth house before. We've dealt with dark energy there. And we actually had two investigators with us. It was actually Dave's niece and her son.
His son.
And something was going on in the Bell Boyd suite, which was in that, you know, the room that they were staying in. And we ended up having to get them out to put them into a hotel because it wasn't safe for them. And I remember when we were leaving, we were, you know, bringing them out of the room, and we looked back and the chandelier was even shaking. It was crazy. Like they were pushed. I think the bed was nudged. We found a portal that was in the bathroom there. Travis ended up getting a photo of a black mist on the Polaroid camera that was in the bathroom. I mean, it was just off the wall. And we were staying there that night, and Melissa was like, "Let's keep the lights on for this place here." So,
yeah, we used on that investigation, we had the 3D connector. We had a figure coming out of the mirror.
That's right, we did.
The mirror was a portal. And the figure kept touching my son, and he got ill shortly afterwards.
It looked like it was strangling Brian at the time.
Yeah, and he got very ill. We actually sent my niece and my son to a hotel that night. They didn't spend the night in that room.
That was actually my first investigation, and it really, I was really
welcome to the paranormal, Joe.
I was pretty spooked, but I was also kind of like, wow. Like I was saying earlier, that's the other side of things that you don't see, you know, going to the Devil's Tower and driving around for time.
Right. Now, was that the, on your website, was that the Bergen House that you were talking about?
The Bergen House, that's the one that's in Bergen, New York. And it's just this dilapidated looking barn, farmhouse. And, you know, when you're driving up to the location, it's just this little dirt road and only one car can go down there. And there's just potholes everywhere. And the potholes are so deep, you got to go like 5 miles an hour. So if you wanted to flee from there and haul ass, you're not going to be able to do that. But I mean, the stuff that we got at Bergen House, it was crazy. When we met the owner, Kathy, she was like, "Oh, you know, we have this spirit in the attic. You have to ask permission to come up there. Otherwise, he'll, you know, do something to you. We've got witches and stuff here. We've got a, you know, like poisonous swamp. We got basically everything from like UFOs to Bigfoot and all kinds of stuff in her backyard." And I was like, "Oh, okay, all right." But I mean, the evidence that we got was incredible. It started off with in the attic. We ended up getting an EVP. It was a voice that said, "My name is Hell." Travis ended up getting touched. He started, you know, he ran from the spot that he was in. And then the music box that we had in the bedroom starts going off. So we go in there and Dave starts taking all these photos. And we basically caught like a manifestation of a spirit that was turning into this giant shadow. It's on our .com under the gallery. And you'll see it starts off with like these little white mists. And then the last photo is just this big black shadow, and you can still see the blue of the wall. Like, this thing was humongous. It was really impressive photo that they took.
What made that photo weird was I was clicking very quick, and I had tons of photos that were normal, and you could see the light, and you would see the little white orbs forming, and then boom, this middle photo was this black figure in front of me, and then 1 second later, it was back to normal again. And then we used the spirit box, and we knew the name of the guy who was supposed to haunt the attic. And Nick asked on the spirit box, "Was this Mr. So and so?" And the answer we got back was, "My name is Hell." And we all kind of looked at each other. And the owner was fine with it. She's like, "Ah, he's just trying to scare you. Don't worry about it." You know, and she slept there that night. So in the room with the portal.
That's got to be crazy. Yeah.
But you know, it's crazy because, you know, you have like all this crazy stuff that happened in these places and people are like, "No way I want to stay there." But we're like those people like, "I want to stay there. I want to stay in this room where stuff happened." Like, for instance, we did Lizzie Borden house recently, and I was fortunate to be in the room that the stepmother was hacked. So, you know, I was showing people because you have the old photo from the crime scene, and I was showing people like the side by side. I'm like, "Look, we're going to be right here." And they're like, "Are you crazy?" I'm like, "Yes, yes, I am." So, but
you know, I think honestly, you got to be a little bit, just a little bit on the weird side to do this.
Oh, we're all weird.
We're all weird for sure.
Yeah. Dale mentioned Cashtown.
I love Cashtown.
Cashtown was great. And there's actually a really funny clip on our Facebook page. And I'm in front of one of the rooms. And we were actually fortunate. We stayed there when there was nobody else staying there. So we had the whole place to ourselves. And, you know, I'm asking, "Oh, what room number am I standing in front of?" And we actually got a voice that says, "F you." And I was like, "Well, that's not nice." But, you know, it's funny when you get, like, spirits with, you know, sense of humor that, you know, play along a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, occasionally. So I also noticed that some of your equipment, you guys use the Mobile Connect.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also noticed that a lot of people seem to be using that lately. Is that really a good device to use?
It is, but you have to be smart the way that you use it. The way that it works, it's a technology that video game used, Microsoft, right? Xbox. It used to be for motion games.
Copyrighted. We don't want to get in trouble.
Copyrighted, yeah. So, you know, it basically, it's a camera and it puts out a whole bunch of dots. And if there's movement, then it'll assign like a stick figure. So that's the way that it works in paranormal too. You can't see something, but there's something moving. However, what you have to consider is what's in the background of that, because it can create false positives. You know, there could be like
a lamp or a coat rack
that'll map it out as a figure, because it's seeing this like figure like thing. And if you move the camera right, it'll assign something to it. So perfect, you got to always pay attention. What's that?
At the Phelps Hotel in the basement, they put a lot of storage in. There was a boatload of Christmas trees down there. So, you know, here I am with the Kinect cam, like, you know, just doing my own business. And I turn, I'm like, "Oh my God, it's everywhere." And then I called Nick over, because once I see something, I'll call somebody over immediately. And we noticed it was framing the Christmas trees. So it could just be a regular pole, but that technology is going to give that pole like hands and stuff, because that's all it knows.
Right. It's effective, but a flawed technology, though.
Yes.
Okay. So out of all of your equipment that you use, what is your favorite?
Probably Terry and CJ. They're the ones with the ability.
They've been classified. They've been classified as equipment now.
Yeah, and well, Travis too. But I mean, you know, if they say, "Yo, there's something going on," then I'll take that over, you know, a piece of equipment, because I mean, their bodies are the equipment itself.
Right. Sometimes,
yeah, we have batteries in CJ every once in a while.
Yeah,
it is nice to have people who are sensitive with you.
We've got a few of them. Missy couldn't make the show today, and she's very experienced medium, and she's been mentoring CJ and Terry. Travis, he's very seasoned. He can see things. He can talk to them. He's actually got a spirit friend, Eric, that follows him around.
He just told me Eric's actually here with us.
Maybe he should get his window too to pop in on the chat.
Maybe Eric, if you squeeze in right here, they might be able to see you.
Yeah, and Terry's like a human EMF detector, and I mean, she'll just feel things. Like you walk in the room, she's like, "There's something here," you know, and
not quite that dramatic. But.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is she's always been sensitive, but she really opened up when we went to the Conjuring House back in October. And her and Missy, they held hands and they were doing a walkthrough. And they're basically just feeling energy off of each other. Like one would feel when someone was going to, you know, feel something, and vice versa. And since then, like, it unlocked Terry. And now she can, like, look at a photo and do a read on it. And it's just developing.
Right.
And CJ, when we first brought him on the team, he was just a cameraman. And, you know, from where he started, from the Paranormal Club to now, it's incredible, the stuff, the progression, and, you know, as short of a time that he's, you know, really upped his game.
I would say the first time that Terry raised my eyebrow, we went into, Joe, what do you call the investigation who hooked up with us?
The Masonic Lodge.
Yeah, we were in a Masonic Lodge, and, we were up there, and we were there like a minute and a half in the main room. And Terry said, "Something just touched my leg." And a minute later, she's like, "I don't feel good." And she ran out and started throwing up in the next room. And we're all like, "What was that?" And then we realized she was a female in a room that male onlys were allowed in.
Yep.
And it's like they wanted to get her out right away. And I was kind of like, "Wow, they got to her."
And I was sitting in one of those, like, right on the side where the important people would sit.
Yeah.
Right, so, in view of the door. Like, as soon as they would walk in, we were first to be seen.
Yeah.
Masonic Lodges, that's pretty interesting, because I'm a little jealous now, because I'd really like to do an investigation in one. I actually got the opportunity to go into a Masonic Lodge with a cousin of mine who is actually going to try and get me into the Masons, but I never followed through with it. And it's impressive to see it in there.
But
with having a female in that lodge like that, I can see how they would target her first.
Noticed in that lodge too is they immediately played games with us, because the equipment activated right away, where we would have a REM pod go off on one end and we'd run over to film it, and then the music box would play on the other side. And then it switched to the REM pod, and then we realized we're like, "We're just running back and forth. This must be intentional at this point."
Yep.
So
there were things that
happened that would be traditionally that would happen during the beginning of a meeting. And we heard things that had happened without obviously getting into too much detail. They, right after certain things happened, that's when Terry felt it on her leg. And I've never seen her run that fast. And I'm chasing behind her. You know, I like to consider myself a decent runner, but she was just like out. And then she just went to the toilet and just.
They overdosed her with some bad energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to. They didn't want to. And Terry was just, maybe because Terry was the most sensitive one there, that was a female, she was probably the most.
Mm-hmm. And also Travis had some big contributions, because he was seeing gentlemen a lot of the night, and there's a wall with them where they have, you know, photos of a lot of the people that have passed away and all, and he was able to identify, you know, one of the people that he saw right from the wall.
That's pretty cool. That is really cool. So out of all your investigations that you've done, what is your absolute favorite?
For me, I had to think about this for a long time. If you're asking me what the creepiest one was, it was the Bergen house that we were talking about. But the most active by far was the Lizzie Borden house. From the minute we got there to the minute we left, it was just insane. And I definitely want to go back to that one. Mm. And I got to sleep in Lizzie's room that night.
So I think all of you probably have different favorite ones, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like for me, it would be St. Albans Sanatorium in Radford, Virginia. And, we had so much stuff going on there. I had a different team at the time, and it was turning people against people. Someone got choked in the bowling alley there. We were hearing pig squeals coming through the ghost box. I was in one of the patients' rooms, and she had a baby fetus, and she had it stored away in one of the rooms, and it was discovered. She was so upset that she hanged herself in the suicide bathroom. So we had a little toy doll that we put into this little cubby hole that she kept the her baby fetus in a jar in, and I had like the most violent yank on my sweater. It was like yanked down, and I was like, whoa. And just everything about that place, just the EVPs, the creepiness of it, that was probably easily my favorite one.
Cool. Anyone else?
I mean, for me, I agree. Lizzie Borden is the, that's my favorite, because between Travis and CJ, we cracked the case. So just to know that I believe it's right that we know the truth about what happened back then, I think is amazing. And the fact that, that they tried so hard for us not to figure it out.
Yeah, they were taking people out one by one.
What was the maid's name? What was I know who the
Maggie.
Her name is Bridget Sullivan. The girls called her Maggie as an insult because she was.
I was trying to figure out. I couldn't remember Bridget.
Yeah.
DJ keeps trying to jump in.
I was going to say, if you think about that investigation, we only investigated one room within 2 hours and we pretty much had everything we needed.
We only did two rooms in the entire night. We had so much activity, we couldn't leave the room.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we want to go back. But.
And one of the cool things was that CJ and Travis both saw, they were shown what happened during the murder, which I thought was really fascinating. We believe that it was Mrs. Borden that showed them. I had CJ laid down where Mrs. Borden was murdered, and he saw the whole thing happen. And then I was in one of the back rooms down the hall, and I was there with Travis, and he points and he's like, I see a woman there. So that's going into the room where Mrs. Borden was hacked up. And, we went in there and he sees Mrs. Borden and she's, like doing something on the edge of the bed there where her body was found. And she saw he saw the uncle come in with the axe and hit her. And apparently Lizzie was the lookout on it. And then, Mr. Borden came down at home. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they ended up taking him out also.
Wow.
The reason being is Mr. Borden was killing the alibi because the uncle was supposed to go get his alibi fixed. And with Mr. Borden being there, he puts him at the place of the scene of the crime. So Travis saw the uncle getting nervous and Lizzie getting nervous. And then after a while, he finally went at the Mr. Borden and then ran out to create an alibi, which was just too much of an alibi. Just to memorize the license hat of a trolley driver and six different priests' names that he was talking to on a trolley when he was English and they were Irish and he probably normally wouldn't have even talked to him to begin with. It just sounded like he had set up an alibi all afternoon and that Mr. Borden almost destroyed that alibi. So we pieced a lot together. And at the end of that, when we were communicating with the uncle, I got drained and I had taken a 5-hour energy shot earlier and I was wide awake. And 2 minutes later, I felt like I was on anesthesia. I was going, I heard them talking to me and about me, but I wasn't responding, and I was kind of going out pretty quick. And we had 11 people there, and only 6 of us spent the night. 5 had to leave and sleep at a hotel.
Everybody was getting nauseous and throwing up. It's incredible. Wow. I've never seen anything like that before. CJ ended up getting affected the worst. He got singled out, and we feel that Bridget, the maid, was kind of trying to protect him. And at one point during the ghost box, she said, you know, close him up because he's so open. And I guess he didn't close himself up enough. He kept throwing up. We had to get him and put him into a hotel. Thankfully, Joe's got some hotel connections that we were able to set something up, you know, as late as we did. And you know, it was a bad deal for CJ that time.
Well, it was funny, though, when that was happening, I was talking with my mentor, Missy, and she kept saying, open up. And right around the same time, we got that over the spirit box saying, close up. So it's crazy how, like, the timeline fit exactly to what was going on.
Right. But it was funny that everyone that was throwing up, as soon as they get outside, they would recover and be okay. And then when they felt good enough to go back in the house, it started immediately again when they walked in the front of the door.
Mm-hmm. That's typically what we'll do. But what was uniquely different with CJ's situation, the reason why we all decided to kind of pull the plug and get him out of here, like Dave said, you leave their area, you're fine. But CJ was still being affected outside. Like, this is a problem. We got to go.
And then after CJ left, they targeted me, mm-hmm. which is funny because I felt them chasing me out the door as I went to puke. But I also felt them stabbing me in the back, like what would have felt like I was getting stabbed in the back. But CJ was at his hotel room not watching us on our live, and he felt the same thing. So CJ and Missy and I have this crazy connection now where we feel each other. You know, like if CJ has a headache, right,
your energies are flowing through each other at that point.
Yeah, it's crazy. Oh,
very much. What? I never saw Carrie complain about her back before. That was the first time I ever saw her. She literally went out throwing, she fell down and started screaming, my back, and she had her hand on her back, and we had stuff going on in every direction. It just seemed like, you know, it was a fire drill and you were just constantly moving.
So it sounds like there was a lot of bad energy there.
Yeah, we feel that
they want us to know the truth. Sorry, CJ. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say the same thing.
I have a lot of going on right now because my MacBook keeps draining faster than it's ever drained before. So I got to go plug this in again. Holy cow.
Oh, Dave.
Okay, Nick, were you going to say something there?
I was going to say we felt that it was Lizzie and the uncle that were kind of, you know, CJ was like a wounded person in the ocean, and they were like the sharks sensing the blood encircling him. That's right. Basically what that investigation was for him.
I tend to have problems protecting and grounding myself, which leads me into some trouble sometimes, but we're working on it.
You're grounded.
Yeah.
He's a work in progress.
No, that's okay. It's okay to be that way. I'm one of them too that can kind of sense things around me. I just haven't gotten the understanding and the training that I need for it myself. But I see where he's coming from with it. You got to kind of learn how to close yourself off before, you know, it's kind of like a Ouija board. Once you open that portal in the Ouija board, you've got to close it. Otherwise, everything starts coming through.
Or you can just not touch Ouija boards in the first place.
Nope. What was that, Joe?
You can just not touch a Ouija board in the first place.
I got two of them. Want to see one?
You know, I've had a bad experience with a Ouija board. I'll never touch one again.
I'm with you.
I don't think I've ever heard someone say, I'm so glad I played with that Ouija board.
Hey, I was 8 years old when I used one by myself, and it actually told me in the end that it wanted to take me to hell with it.
Wow. Well, my experience, I was in, I don't remember if it was high school or college, something like that. It's just such a blur at this point. But, you know, we would play with the Ouija board, and I'd be like, all right, I'm going to do it by myself to see if anybody's moving it. And even if I didn't have a Ouija board, I would draw it out and use a penny and, you know, do it. And all of a sudden I started having so much bad luck. And a lot of, you know, a lot of the sessions I would have would be in my car. It was a 1989 Chevy Corsica, which I ended up renaming the Cursica because of all the problems that I had with it. And, you know, like one thing would go on the car. The next week, something else would go on it. And it was like 5 weeks in a row that something went in the car. And then I was coming from class to my car, and my car is engulfed in flames. So I had bad luck after that. And then eventually, I guess, whatever attachment that I had from it, it went away, and I've been good since then. And that's my last time that I'll mess with a Ouija board.
Oh, maybe it all just kind of targeted the car and stuck to the car.
Well, my wallet, too. It had an attachment to my wallet.
You didn't name the car Christine?
I should have, right?
That was a good movie. So if you guys been at this for a while, got quite the resume on your website, which, you know, I recommend people checking that out. It's very interesting. But this is a little round the table here. Each one of you is going to answer this. What is on your bucket list? What place do you really, really, really want to get to someday in the future that you haven't been to yet?
There's a bunch for me, but if I had to narrow it down, I really want to get to the Axe House in Iowa. I don't know why I'm drawn to it, why I want to be there, but when we do that trip to Midwest, I've always said we should hit Deadwood, where Nick has already been. I want to go to Deadwood and then maybe hook around to Iowa and hit the Axe House. And I'm not going to say I'll call it a career, but let's just say I will be very happy to get that on the resume.
DJ?
I wouldn't say that I have like any bucket list. You know, I'm still very new to this, so any bucket list location, you know, I was lucky enough to go to Lizzie and The Conjuring, which are two huge locations in my first year doing this. So, you know, I'm proud with that, and whatever else comes our way, I'll be grateful with that as well. So I don't really have one.
I really want to go to an abandoned asylum, prison, anything like that. There's a cat. So yeah, that's definitely anywhere we can go. That's any sort of asylum or prison would be awesome for me. That's been on my bucket list for a while.
I'd love to do, you know, like Waverly Hills, Trans-Allegheny, and if I can make my way out to California, I'd love to do the Dorothea Puente House or the Omen House, where the Sharon Tate murders happen on that ground.
See, I don't have a specific location either, just more of a type. Like, I'm obsessed with like schools and orphanages and stuff like that. So, any of those kinds.
Sounds like you like to communicate with the children.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Spirits.
The empath.
For me, I'm thinking Myrtle's Plantation down in New Orleans. That's one of my biggest bucket list places. So, any place special you want
to
go?
Anything that has to do with ice cream.
It's haunted by Dr. Mudd.
We should have known.
We're going to haunt the Carvel for you, Trevor.
Dairy Queen.
Yeah, I want us let any Carvels that are haunted, let us know. We'll
let
travel.
Us know. Yeah. We'll send Travis in there. He'll get them all out.
Or what is this? The Cold Stone Creamery?
Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen.
Any of you guys.
Just have
any of them. Rita's.
Oh, we got
Rita's is one of his favorites.
Oh, they're Wisconsin, so they're used to dairy. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you can always come up here and have some Culver's.
There you go.
Yeah.
We got Culver's. They got that. It's not actually ice cream. It's frozen custard.
Mm-hmm. We haven't made our way to Wisconsin yet. We've been in a lot of states, but Wisconsin's one of them that we haven't hit. What would you say is, like, if you come to Wisconsin, you got to come and investigate this place?
Joe?
That's a tough choice.
It's a very tough choice. We got a lot of stuff here that goes down. We got a couple of places. They're parks. One of them is Wildcat Mountain. Mm-hmm. That's up by Minnesota up there. Was it Eau Claire area or La Crosse area?
Over by, it's closer to Hillsboro.
Okay, near Hillsboro. And then we have, what's that other one that's up there by Eau Claire? That
the Devil's Punch Bowl's up there.
Yeah, the Devil's Punch Bowl. That one is said to be not really like a haunted.
It's enchanted. They believe it's enchanted. Gnomes and fairies are to be seen around there, apparently.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then we do have a couple. I think a couple of asylums here too that can be looked into.
Yeah, you can never go wrong with an asylum.
No, those are definitely fun. You get a little bit of everything there.
They never disappoint.
Those, from what I hear, definitely have a lot of energy attached to them because of some of the things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, you check that out. Then of course, then there's what was that place? Most of a lot of the cemeteries around here, but Forest Hill is the oldest in Madison.
Yeah, Forest Hill Cemetery in Madison is the oldest, and it has. A Civil War section, it has a World War I section, it has a World War II section, and not only that, it is actually situated around effigy mounds. There are effigy mounds inside the cemetery around some of the areas like Civil War and stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's Bloody Bride Bridge. There's also the legend of the hellhounds over by that... that's over by the La Crosse area.
Yeah, that's
and Mary Dean.
The hellhounds on the island or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember that one. Yeah, there's a lot of them around here.
And then, of course, our favorite that we said something about earlier is Beast of Bray Road.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if once we make our way to Wisconsin, we'll have to, you know, tag team it on one of those locations.
Oh, definitely. If we can get everything set up, you know, let us know that you're going to be in the area. We'll see what we can pull together.
Yeah.
We'll send CJ first, and then he can report back what we're going to run into.
Yeah, that works.
He's our bait and our chum.
So. Actually, you guys are that good. I'd like to have you up there with us to get an idea of what kind of energies that you're going to be sensing whenever we do go into that property.
Yeah, we haven't gone out to a lot of places in Wisconsin yet. So there's quite a few places that are still on our list here. We haven't got out of state yet. There's a few places close by in Iowa that we'd like to get to.
Eventually.
I mean, I just want to go just to say that I've been there and get my picture taken on the spot. I want to go to
How far from Chicago are you guys?
About 3 hours, 3.5.
No. We're only about just about a 2 hour drive.
Oh, so you're the faster driver. Okay.
So
I'm the professional driver.
I'm kind of
calls me the human GPS.
I haven't driven.
A professional sleeper in our group, so that's.
I don't drive much anymore, and when the last time I was driving for a living, I was in Madison, so yeah, you know, back then from Dane County Airport to Chicago O'Hare was about a 3 hour drive.
Well, it depends on what time of the year and everything too.
Well,
and you know, what road you take.
Well, I was driving cab, so you figure it out. That was for Union. But anyway, you know, there's a lot of places, but the one I want to get to this year, hopefully, is in Iowa. It's where the plane crashed, you know, the day of music died.
Oh yeah!
Oh, Richie Valens and
Valens
and
it's Richie Valens,
Big Bopper,
and
Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly. Yep. Yeah, that's not too far away either. So
yeah, that's kind of a stone throw from us.
So you got to go to Jack's house while you're there.
Yeah, that and the Van Meter. Van Meter Visitor, I think that's what they call it, Van Meter Visitor. It's in Van Meter, Iowa.
Yeah, that's
a little bit more of a travel.
Just a little bit. That one is supposed to be a like a weaned creature that flew into back down into the mine, and they blasted it shut on it, and they haven't. I don't think they. I'm not sure of the legend. He's read more about it than I have.
Mm.
Well, yeah. There's a haunted ice cream parlor nearby. Let Travis know.
Yeah. Travis has been a little quiet.
We'll find him a haunted ice cream parlor somewhere.
He's thinking about ice cream. He hasn't had dessert yet.
Oh, jeez.
He wanted to investigate Jerry's, but it's not haunted.
No. We do have some ice cream factories up here. We got Shep's and
the old Shep's. The old Shep's might be haunted, though.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Travis came to life.
I've never heard of any stories when I worked there, but you never know. The place is old.
You never know. There could have been somebody, factory worker, making some ice cream, and he fell into the vat, and now it became cherry ice cream, and
died of frostbite, more or less.
Now his ghost haunts the factory. We don't know, but we'll have to find out.
You ever work in an ice cream place? Man, I worked in one once, and it's like all summer long, constant cold, because you're in there, in the freezer. And, you know, it's below zero, so this stuff, when it's made and it comes through, it gets frozen fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're all bundled up in these winter, you know, like you're going deer hunting. And then you got to go out and it's 90 plus degrees outside, you know, right after work. You're outside, 90 plus degrees outside. Yeah. Instant cold all the time. Mm-hmm. I could see somebody working there getting frostbite or just forgotten about and locked in a freezer.
Find them the next day and it's a human icicle.
Oh my.
Hmm.
The Shining.
Lock them in the freezer.
Yep.
Oh, good grief. So how far out west have you guys been?
For me, West Virginia, the group has hit Ohio a bunch of times. West Virginia, Nick is the most well-traveled because Nick was doing trips before the rest of us were in the group. So I know he's been to Deadwood and he's been out on the West Coast chasing after baseball stadiums and sites while he's out there. But Nick, by far, the most well-traveled. We have tended to stay Northeast, Mid-Atlantic. You know, when you watch the shows,
right.
Earth Adventures has been really targeting the West, and they always seem to be in Utah, California, and Arizona, Nevada. And then you watch Kindred Spirits, they're New England. And, you know, you watch the shows, they kind of have their region. And we feel like we're like that Mid-Atlantic region where it's New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut, Maryland, West Virginia, like Virginia, those type of areas seem to be where we're concentrated right now for proximity. Terry and Travis being down in Virginia, and the rest of us all being very close in Jersey.
Right. Well, I would assume that the East Coast there has more activity than most any other place because it's one of the oldest parts of the United States, and it's got, you know, that's the New England area, I believe, is where all the original 13 colonies were.
Yeah. Yeah, have the colonial aspect, definitely, you know, way prior to the Civil War, a lot of older mansions that were able to hit over in these areas that have been around for hundreds of years. So.
Mm-hmm.
And the Native American background that's all over the states.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, and then you add in all the Confederate stuff that happened back then.
Mm-hmm.
That's down in that area. Man, that's got to keep them busy right there alone. You know, with all the activity that's possible in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
We can make a career out of Pennsylvania if we want it. I mean, we've branched more into New England lately. We've been hitting Connecticut, Rhode Island, and those areas and branching into there a little more.
Well, I was just actually going to mention Rhode Island. I was looking at your page here quick, and I see that you have Conjuring House, Harrisville, Rhode Island. Is that the only place in Rhode Island you guys have been?
So far, yeah.
And we'll be going back to Conjuring this Saturday for round two. And then we've got Silver Spring Sanitarium, which we have booked for April. And we'll start to fill in, you know, the rest of the dates and stuff. Other pretty cool locations that we're talking about setting up. We'll fill those in, you know, at some point soon.
Yeah, we got to hit Pennhurst at some point. Nick's been there, but the rest of us got to get over there.
Yeah, every time I go to Pennhurst, I get physically affected there. Like the first time I walked into the Mayflower building, and it was like I was walking in quicksand. The second time I went there, as soon as I got out of my car, it's like something hit me, and it like just stopped me. Like something happened to my chest where I thought, I don't know if I was having a heart attack. That's what it felt like. But I felt I couldn't even walk. I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. Something's wrong. And then 10 minutes later, it was gone like nothing ever happened. And that was just like just stepping foot on the property. So I don't know. Something there just, you know, likes to mess with me physically.
Right.
But I'd love to go back, though. You can't scare me off.
So the when I mentioned the Conjuring House and you mentioned another place right after that, a sanatorium?
Yeah, Silver Spring Sanatorium.
And that's that in Silver Spring.
That's in West Virginia, I believe.
West Virginia, okay.
Yeah, West Virginia.
And that ever... we didn't even know about that until Destination Fear went there, and we're like, wow, you know, I mean, they've got some pretty cool stuff, but when we watch them, it's interesting and all, but they're not really doing all the investigation stuff. Like, they'll go do a little EVP here and there, but, you know, I think if we got, like, all of us in there, I think we'd get some great stuff.
Yeah. So have you ever thought about maybe going to Roanoke and checking any of that out?
We'd love to go anywhere. We're very open-minded to going anywhere. If you tell us,
Roanoke,
you know,
on Virginia? Location,
what's that?
Roanoke Island.
Oh, Roanoke Island.
You know the story behind that about the colony that disappeared.
Yeah. They've actually done some excavation there lately that they think they've pretty much solved the mystery now, and they've been doing a lot of excavation over there.
They say that a lot on TV. It's all about the ratings.
Yeah, it is all about the ratings, but that has been a true mystery for quite a long time.
We got Chris here wanting to know what's the creepiest thing that happened at the Conjuring House.
Oh, CJ, this is all you.
What do you mean all me? So the creepiest thing for us that happened at the Conjuring House is we were in the main room where the supposed seance happened and the possession or whatever occurred there. And right away, once we started investigating, I kept hearing this voice, kept feeling this presence drawing me back towards the basement area, towards the back bathroom area. And it started pulling at the back of my shirt. And sure enough, Terry and our other psychic, Missy, they were also feeling drawn to that back bathroom. So what we didn't know what was going on. So what do? We sent our buddy Travis, you know, no fear, can't scare him. Three of us were kind of freaked out. So we sent Travis in. He was looking at all these portals and he was like, that's probably why you're getting drawn in there. There are two portals facing each other, mirrors left and right. And, you know, we didn't go in there at that time because we didn't know it was safe. However, this weekend when we go back, we're going back with a different attitude and we're going to get some answers that we may have missed the first time. So I'm excited to see all that.
Can I jump in and say the weirdest thing that happened at the Conjuring House was when we found that secret birthing room and Nick pretended to be giving birth.
Well, I was role-playing, but to my credit, though, I did get some EVPs, though.
He did get some EVPs. And it was quite hilarious, but...
And he has to
you got to have fun lighting the mood a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, we do that sometimes. Dave is always, you know, the scare master, and CJ's always the victim, usually. So, you know, we have fun on it, but, you know, when it comes down to investigating, we're, you know, locked in serious.
So I guess another question I've been kind of wondering, do any of you ever get spooked enough where you just take off, just leave the scene?
No.
I never was, and it's a funny story. We were at Rolling Hills Asylum, and I'm usually the daredevil, and they're asking me to go down the hall while they grid me, and I'm down the hall by myself, and it's like, you know, one of those, the nurse was killed here and someone committed suicide, go down the dark hall and stand there by yourself, and I'm like, you know, 100 yards away, and I'm standing there in the dark, and I've got these two dark rooms next to me, and I look down the hall and I hear seven people scream at the same time and run in seven different directions, and that was the longest walk of my life. I crept down the hall. I didn't know what they saw. I didn't know what happened. I'm looking behind me, and I'm creeping up the hall. And by the time I finally get there, it was the longest walk I ever had. And I asked what happened, and they said they heard a noise. And when they looked in the room, two bats flew out at them, and it was in a different direction. I was never so relieved to hear that. I was like, oh my God.
Steve, I thought you were going to tell the Haldeman story.
The moral of that story is bats are scarier than ghosts.
Okay, so you want me to tell the Haldeman story? That was another one. We were in the final room that we went in was the creepiest room, and it was the one room that was like just presenting dark stuff, like didn't want us there and get out kind of stuff.
That was the maid's kitchen. It was a separate house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know we're up there, and Terry's sitting on the floor taking notes, and Melissa's got her phone app out, and Nick's doing a session out loud. And, you know, we're all standing there, and the timing could not have been worse, because right when Nick got a negative answer, a bug hit my leg and I felt its wings flapping on my leg. And right when Nick goes, it just said it's taking us to hell. And all of a sudden I went, what the hell? And I jumped in the air, and I never saw a group of people move so fast in my life. Terry was trying to stand up to get down the stairs. Nick did a complete 180 in the air, landed in front of me, and I could see the sweat pouring down the side of his face immediately. I thought Melissa threw her phone and screamed. Like, we all just went, and the timing could not have been worse. It just said, go to hell. And all of a sudden, I was like, what the hell? And I screamed, and everyone in the room just blood-curdling.
Oh, my God.
Timing is everything. But the thing was, it wasn't planned. It was an accident. But I spent 45 minutes on the car ride home laughing about it because I couldn't get it out of my head.
You spent the whole week laughing about it.
I've heard that story at least maybe 15 times.
That story helped me develop abs again because I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah.
Okay. But then after that, right, in that kitchen, Travis ended up getting scratched there, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
After the bug incident, Travis got scratched.
Wow. Well, that's the most scared I've seen Travis. When we were in the one room, Travis was kind of staring, and we're like, Travis, what do you see? What do you see? And he's like, well, he's presenting himself. And I'm like, what's wrong? And he's like, he doesn't have a head. And we're like, what? And then, you know, our mediums that were remotely connecting, we're like, mm-hmm, probably time for you to leave that room because they just don't want you to be there. And they're projecting scary things to get you out of there. So we decided it's time to leave that room.
Mm-hmm. When we were at Balladary,
that's Gettysburg.
Yeah, in Gettysburg. We didn't know it at first, but so we were in my room. We were doing EVP session, and first and last name came in so clearly. And it's actually my last name was pronounced the common way. It's mispronounced by everybody. And that was the moment where I was like, I might sleep in the car. Like, I got a little spooked, you know, nothing too crazy. I tried to put on a big tough guy. I'm not even going to lie. I was scared the shit out of me.
Well, you know, what's funny about that is we'll get our names said, and they'll say our names over the spirit box and on the ovulus, and we've always heard our first names being mentioned. But to hear Joe's first and last name, and Joe's face turned around and looked at us, and we were like, oh, my God, we've never heard a last name said before. And that's what put it over the top, like, you mm-hmm. know, Joe looked terrified.
The creepiest thing is when you get one of us coming through on the ghost box. And we had Travis's voice come through at the exchange hotel, came through on the ghost box. And we're like, you're right here. Why are you coming out of here? And also, my voice came through at the Mud House in Waldorf, Maryland, which was pretty crazy, too.
So, and I found it interesting a couple times. We had the music box not playing, and we heard the music box over.
Yeah. Yeah. Or sometimes if we have a REM pod off, we'll hear the REM pod sound come through on the ghost box, like the beeping. It's some weird stuff that goes on.
But I don't think any of that comes close to the dog. Do you want to tell me about the
dog? So we're doing a client case. We were there maybe 2 weeks ago. And one of the instances that he said is, you know, his dog, he put him down December 7th. They had the vet come out and they put him down in the TV room right in front of the sofa. And, you know, he says sometimes he'll feel him there. So we're trying to do EVP sessions and, you know, we're doing ghost box. And we're getting clues as far as what's going on here. We ended up getting the dog's name come through on the ghost box. And then we said, oh, it's Major, which was the dog's name. It's Major here. And then, you know, we got a voice said he's here. And then Melissa asks, oh, can you bark for us? You know, and we're continuing on. And then as clear as day, you can hear the dog bark. And we played this for the homeowner, and he was just like, he got so emotional. He ended up sending us the clip of, you know, his dog when it was alive barking. And I mean, it's the same exact bark. We actually have that clip on our Facebook page. I urge everybody to go over to our Facebook page and check it out, because it is incredible. If you're a pet lover and you've lost a pet, this is pure proof that the pets, you know, they can stay behind. And to me, that's comforting. Like when I lost my dog, his name was Cubby. He was a Maltese. It was tough. And usually when I go to shower, he would press up against the door and I'd hear that door move. And that day that he passed away, I went to shower and that happened. And that's the last time that I've heard it happen. Sometimes when we're sleeping, Melissa will feel like little feet on the bed. You want to go into that?
Yeah, there's been times where I'm just laying there and it does feel like little tiny paws are walking like over my legs. And I think it's our current dog, but I look over and he's next to me sleeping. So I don't know. I assume it's him. I'm going to believe it's him.
Anything's possible. And it's
anything is possible.
If we got a spirit, what's to say the animals don't have a spirit? Mm-hmm. You know,
exactly.
Question, though, is, okay, you know, we can have dog spirit, cat spirits, maybe a horse spirit, but you never hear about, like, insect spirits or anything like that. I mean, is it maybe just animals that have been, like, you've had that human touch with them? Maybe there's more of the soul there. I don't know, but, you know, it's interesting.
It is interesting. You know, somebody's got a question here.
Actually, it's a pretty good question.
Yeah, it is. Do you guys prepare differently for client cases and go into with a different mindset since the family still has to live there if you find evidence of a haunting?
I would say 100%, because we're not allowed to disclose what we find in a private one, because you could devalue the house worth for real estate. Right. It has to be privately done. In those circumstances, unlike a hotspot location where we've paid to be there or we've been invited to be there, we have to clear certain things. Like if there's animals and things that have to be debunked and noise in the background, that has to be accounted for prior. It might not be an isolated location where there could be traffic outside. So there's all kinds of things that have to be considered, you know, when you walk into a private location. It's very different. And the last thing we don't provoke anywhere we go, but the last thing you want to do is provoke something or stir something up that someone's going to have to deal with on the back end. We kind of go in open hearts, open minds to every place we go. We're here to help. We're here to receive any information that you want to present. We're here to help try and communicate. If there's anything we can do for you, you know, that's our mentality in all investigations, but especially in someone's private home, you have to have that respect.
Right, right.
And also building off that, we typically do not put any client case footage on there, but the homeowner was like, you know, you can put this on there because it's that awesome. So he gave us permission. He's like, I'm not leaving this house. I'm going to die here. You know, so,
right.
You know, we're not going to put anything else but that, because it's such amazing footage. We posted that. And also, you know, you have to be very cautious when you do a client case, because a lot of these families, they put, you know, all their last penny into having this place. So you need to be sure that you're not saying it's demonic or anything like that if it's not. And, you know, you better be certain that what you say to them, you're taking into consideration that it may freak them out to know that there's a spirit there. So a lot of times we'll tell them, look, you know, if we investigate and we find something, you know, you still have to live there, you know, knowing that you have something. But, you know, thankfully, due to the connections that we have, We've got a bunch of different shaman that we worked with on client cases. If someone needs to be evicted, we can do it, and it's awesome. And going back to you know, what Dave was talking about with moving animals and stuff, we actually had a client case where the client had a full-sized pig in the kitchen, and we had to move the pig out to the garage so that we can not have that contamination. So, right. I mean, it's, we've had so many crazy experiences and situations and all, and it's just the challenge when you're working with a client is to work around it so that we can get the most controlled situation and get the best evidence that we can.
Right. So, yeah, building on what you just said there, too, we have another person that's watching here. They asked the question, do you ever leave the spirit to stay where they are, or do you always release them? So is it just depends on how the client wants it, or is it depend on how the spirit is?
Well, it really depends on the situation. If grandma's hanging out in the house, then, you know, they're okay keeping her there. If there's something that's attacking, then obviously we're going to get rid of them. In my own house, we have two spirits, and I know exactly who they are, and they kind of look out for us. They keep other spirits out of the house. And Terry's got constantly has some activity in her house as far as some of the friends, because she's so open. So she's always got hitchhikers that come over and want to hang out with her.
And I get random stuff. Like, there was an accident at my job, 6 months ago, Nick? Mm-hmm. And it was a fatality. It was a random guy that came into our construction zone and died in a car accident, but he followed me home. So he was here for a couple days and actually alerted me to something really negative in the house that we had to have the shaman take care of. So, but, and then he moved on after he told me what was going on and then moved on. So
yeah, he was like, peace
out. Yeah. So sometimes they want to go, and then, and that makes it easy for us if they just want to go.
Right.
They had no reason to stay here with me.
Yeah.
I also think, like, sometimes the spirit sees you in a way. Like, sometimes I know personally for me, you make a kind of like a personal connection with these spirits, and your heart really hurts for them, and you could feel like their pain and their suffering.
Yeah.
You want to do the best that you can, so you want to help them. And most people, what they don't understand with if you don't have these abilities is that we feel like what they went through. We feel the sadness and the torture and all the anger and stuff like that that they felt when they were alive, and the continued suffering they have being trapped where they are. So in that way, when we make those connections, you kind of want to do everything in your power to help them. And when you do help them, that's a feeling that just makes this all worth it, all the dangers and the evil stuff that we face, completely worth it.
And we've actually got a great story recently. CJ, you want to talk about Isabella? You and Terry took care of this.
Hold on a second. Okay, just wait. I'm sorry. I'm going to wrap things up, and we can put that on the bonus after this, and I'll record that, okay, for our bonus, because we made the hour mark. So, again, if you want to check out these guys, check it out at eastcoastspiritchasers.com. The link's going across the bottom of the screen. And Friday, we are going to have Ernie Pack from Pac-Man Paranormal on Friday. And don't forget to check us out on YouTube and subscribe. And coming in March, we are going to paraflex.com as well.
Now, before we do end it, is there any other website you want
to... I was just going to ask that.
Well, we're on all social media, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just look us up, East Coast Spirit Chasers. Subscribe, follow, like, share, comment. We'd love to hear from you guys.
And you've got all your links on your front page of your East Coast Spirit Chasers.
Right? And you're going back where on Saturday?
To the Conjuring House.
So they're going back to the Conjuring House. So look forward to seeing that on their website and their.
And we'll be going live from there. So definitely check us out.
Check that out.
Facebook Live.
Definitely check that out.
Yep.
I'll be watching that one. So, all right. Till Friday, everybody. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.